Hello, this is Farah Hürdüzü. Right now I am at MUFON 2008 Symposium, San Jose, California. And today my guest is James Carrion. Hello, James. Welcome to show.
Thank you, Farah, for having me on.
So, who is James Carrion?
Well, I have an official title of the International Director of the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. But really, I'm just a guy who has a passion for the truth and for trying to understand what the UFO phenomena is all about. Had this passion all my life since I was age 11, and had the opportunity to join this organization back in 1996. And so to work my way up through the ranks to where I'm at now, and it's just exciting to be in this position and to be in a place where I can meet with like-minded people and to be able to try to come to some sort of understanding of what's going on.
You know what? It is great to see you in this position because you are a very young man and you are coming from the young ufologist generation. So, how long have you been working with MUFON?
I joined MUFON in 96 as a section director in Colorado, and I was invited. Actually, what happened was the headquarters of MUFON moved to Colorado in the year 2000, and I volunteered at headquarters for a while, and I found out that all their files had moved there, these paper files of all the UFO investigations they've done throughout the years, but they weren't being used by anybody. And I thought, boy, we really need to get this information, this wealth of information, out to UFO researchers and investigators. So I proposed a project to the MUFON board, which we call the Pandora Project, and that was to take all these paper files and get them digitally scanned and keyword searchable so that we could send them out to researchers and they could use them in their research. And try to do some pattern studies and figure out whether there's any correlation between the different types of reports or sightings that were in the historical files. And soon after that, I was invited to join the MUFON board. This is, I believe, was around 2002. So I was on the MUFON board for about 4 years, and then when John Schuessler retired in 2006, I was asked if I wanted to put my application in, and I did, and was elected.
And you were elected.
Here I am.
And can we talk about your own opinions about UFOs, or did you have your own experiences?
I've been interested all my life, and I've never seen a UFO, so I've never had a personal experience.
Is it necessary to see a UFO to be a part of the UFO world?
I don't think so, not at all. To me, what's intriguing is that even though I haven't seen anything myself or experienced anything myself, is I've heard enough credible people tell me about their experiences, and I've read enough credible stories that makes me I know absolutely something is going on. There's some reality to this phenomena, and again, my passion is to know what that reality is, and so that's what really drives me.
Yes, this is why we are here, in fact. Not only the guests, the visitors, also the speakers. We are looking for the truth because nobody knows the truth exactly. We just know the pieces of the truth.
Right.
Everybody is here to search the truth. By the way, everybody is talking about upcoming disclosure, and we are aware that many things are changing in the world. So are you happy with the recent changes, with the recent developments?
I have to say I'm very happy with the rise in media attention and awareness that's bringing to this field. I'm a little hesitant to say that I believe disclosure is going to happen, just because looking back at the history of ufology, we have heard the same thing. We've heard hints about the government's going to come out and tell us what they know, and they're working with various insiders or various UFO researchers to reveal the truth to the public. And that's never materialized. So, I don't want to necessarily be led down the wrong path, believing that disclosure is possible, when in fact we've seen that same pattern before. But I do know, as I said earlier, that there's a truth to the phenomena, and there's also an overwhelming interest on elements within the government in this phenomena. And then the question that arises is why? Why is our government or certain elements within it so interested in what we do?
Do you get any requests from governments? I mean, do they need help from MUFON in order to find out the real identity of extraterrestrials or UFOs?
No, I don't think they need our help at all. I think what's happening though is they're worried about what we know and what we do. I do believe that as long as we're operating within a certain box, we're not a threat. But as soon as we start operating outside of that box, they keep a little closer tabs on us. So I think if anybody's in the know, it's not us. We may have a glimpse of the truth. We have a glimpse of what's happening. I'm sure there are elements within the government who've been studying this for years and years. They know what's going on. The question is, how much do they want to reveal to us?
Another thing is that, now, how do you think that the reaction of the public to this symposium since the day it started?
I think with so much public awareness in the last year around Stephenville, Texas, and since 2007, since the O'Hare story broke,
yes.
You know, I absolutely believe the public is very in tune with what's going on, and they may not know we're here, but when they do find out, they come and they're very interested. Because they're just as bewildered as anybody else. They want to know whether there's a reality behind this. So coming in and actually listening to credible speakers and folks who are very educated and very credentialed sort of gives them some sort of sense of reassurance that this is not a fringe element, that this is a real phenomena that people are very interested in.
Yesterday morning we had a very interesting press conference. Mm-hmm. So it was a very intense press conference, in fact. So what is your thought? What is your opinion about it?
You know, I actually was not able to attend the press conference, but from what I could hear, I understand that they interviewed General DeBrower and Anthony Choi, and there was some discussion of the Stephenville radar data. From what I understand, the media was just very interested, and their questions were sober, and their questions were on the spot, and it wasn't about ridiculing the subject. I mean, I think they were fairly impressed with the level of folks that were there.
Just before I came to this conference in Turkey, in one city, there were two different cases. In Adana, two different witnesses managed to videotape two different objects. Mm-hmm. And where the object was seen is very close to an American airbase. So what about this? Are there UFO cases close to military facilities here as well?
There are quite a few UFO sightings that, if they're not right around American military bases, are either in the flight paths of or within the general vicinity. You know, I think that There are UFOs out there that are ours. You know, we're talking our exotic technology, our new stealth aircraft, or whatever it is that we're experimenting with. And that would explain a percentage of the sightings. So there's no doubt that folks are going to see something around military installations. But then there's a whole other group of sightings that simply don't fit in that category. So we can't just label it one thing. The spectrum of activity is so wide and the number of reports so varied. Yes, we can blame exotic military technology on a portion of the sightings, but then there are other things that just seem too fantastical for us to have in our arsenal.
Mm-hmm. So, you said that some of the objects are from the world. They are ours, but not all of them. So, how can you see the difference? What is the difference between ours and theirs?
Well, ours, I think it's...
I mean, I'm not talking about the regular flights, regular jets, or whatever, of course.
Well, I think if we look, for example, at, let's say, the history of stealth aircraft, when the F-119 stealth fighter was under development and was not known to the public, mm-hmm. people were still seeing them because they were being flown around and not necessarily in daylight, but people were witnessing these in the air. And we have reports in our files that years later we look at them and go, oh, okay, that's what people were seeing. So it's obvious that the Air Force in particular, very much uses the UFO field as a cloak as a convenient cover for covering up whatever they're experimenting with. Because they would rather have people report them as UFOs than as new aircraft that anybody, for example, in Russia would then come to know that we have something new in our arsenals. So that's ours. The other things that don't fit are these very strange craft that just have these just incredible flight maneuvers and do things that I don't think any of our aircraft could actually do in terms of withstanding G-forces and accelerating to these fantastical speeds. And not to mention, if we don't look at just the structured craft, we look at things like balls of light seen in the air that seem to be under intelligent control.
Yeah.
So again, it's a range of objects that are seen flying over, and not all of them are just structured craft.
And also thinking about the recent two cases from Turkey, one of the objects was changing its shape, not only the color, but it was changing its shape from triangular to rectangular, from triangular to rectangular. It is difficult to understand, of course, so far for us scientifically or any other way. So what is your future plans in MUFON while we are getting ready to have more activities in UFO field?
Well, we have a number of initiatives that are going on right now. We have a MUFON history team that we're sending out to government archives, mm-hmm, to look for historical documents that relate to the early years of UFOs and how the government...
How early
from the 1940s on,
mm-hmm,
just to try to find out what was the real interest on the part of our government in the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's been a lot of information that's been recently declassified and then deposited in archives that UFO researchers simply have never seen.
Why do you think that they changed their mind and now they are declassified?
Well, some of it's just declassified as a matter of fact because it comes within a certain time period. You know, every 20, 30 years, the information should be declassified. But I think it's also just the issue of we're not looking for necessarily a government document that says UFO on it. What we're looking are for patterns of activities.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you look at the 1947 Roswell crash,
mm-hmm,
there was the official press release that was put out by the 509th Bomber Group. But that must have generated an enormous amount of correspondence from other military bases or other commanders who wanted to know what was going on, who were reporting to higher channels. So if you come across that type of documentation, it's another clue, another piece to the puzzle that can help you try to understand the big picture. So we're looking more for just than government official documentation on specifically UFOs. We're looking for some of the corroborating information. We also have another team, which is our abduction team.
Mm-hmm.
Some very credentialed folks, psychiatrists and psychologists, who have been working on the abduction phenomena for a long period of time. And we've gotten these folks together because we really want to take another real hard look at what's going on with the abduction field. And they have a couple of databases they can work on. We have MUFON's Abduction Transcription Project. This was a project that MUFON did a few years back where they were able to get some of the leading abduction hypnotherapists like Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs to give us their hypnosis session tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And we transcribed them.
Mm-hmm.
But we took all the witness information out because our goal was to develop this large database of experiencers and what they were experiencing and what they were recalling under hypnosis to try to see if there were any patterns of activity, to see if there were any similarities in their encounters. So that data has been sitting in our files for a number of years, but it hasn't really been looked at. And we're also recently we're getting the data from our abduction monitoring project.
What is that?
This is a project we did about 4 or 5 years ago, or maybe a little longer than that. And what we did is we built these black boxes full of electronics gear. And these black boxes, they measured 15 different parameters in the ambient environment. So they were measuring things like changes in light, changes in humidity, changes in temperature, gravity. And then we recruited these volunteers who were claiming that they were having ongoing abduction experiences. We put one of these devices in their homes. It was hooked up to a phone line and was measuring the ambient environment 24 hours a day. And then we download the data each day to a computer.
So how many volunteers are there right now using these devices?
Well, the project is over with. The collection of the data is already done, and there were basically 14 cases.
14 cases from different states?
Different states, different parts of the U.S.
Different age groups, maybe? Different genders?
Different demographics, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we had them journal on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And if they felt like they had an experience, to journal about it, what they thought happened. Because our goal was to try to correlate between the times that they had these experiences and changes that were happening within the environment. If this is a physical reality where they're being abducted from their homes and floated through walls or taken up to craft, we are hoping to see something change within their immediate environment, whether it's a drop in light levels or temperature or gravity or magnetism. And so right now we have all the data collected, and we're having a local professor here in San Jose, Stephen Krunk, who's working for San Jose State University. He's now looking at the data. He's a statistician and trying to figure out what the correlations are.
This is amazing. In abduction field, this is completely new.
Absolutely.
And it can be a revolution.
Absolutely.
On the path to understand the abductions. So when do you think that we will be able to get this information done or for the people who are interested in the...
Well, it's very time-consuming to actually crunch these numbers and try to interpret the data. He's already put in, I think, roughly around 60 hours of work. It's probably going to take another 520 hours to finish all cases. So there's some expense there related to his time. And so we don't know. He's also working a full-time job. Mm-hmm. He may try to hand off some of the work to some of his graduate students. So we're in negotiations right now with him to hopefully try to get it done within the next year.
Well, yes, most of the UFO people are volunteers, especially in this MUFON symposium. I am the witness of all the team, all MUFON members have been working so hard.
Right.
And this is an amazing job, and this is an amazing teamwork.
Absolutely.
So, lots of dedication, lots of sincerity, mm-hmm. lots of honesty, and an amazing hospitality.
Absolutely.
So, personally, I am honored to be invited by you, by MUFON, this year. This is huge. This is wonderful. Mm-hmm. By the way, what is your full-time job?
Actually, I have two full-time jobs.
No,
I actually work for MUFON full-time.
Oh, yes.
And I'm one of the lucky people because probably the only person, I don't know anybody else in the world, that has a job that actually pays to do UFO research. Mm-hmm. And so this is a paying job for me. But I also own a computer training company, and I do computer training. So, yeah, I'm really working a lot on both sides.
Yes, but I can see that you are enjoying every moment of being a part of MUFON.
Oh, absolutely.
So thank you very much for this interview, and thank you very much for giving us this wonderful weekend.
Okay, thank you, Farah. I really appreciate it, and we enjoy having you here.
Thank you.